Hello, this is Cinema Geeks, and I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me again today is Movie Revolt Dan. Hello.
Hello.
And we are here to continue our trek through the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle franchise. So you've already seen us do the original three live action films, and today we're going to turn our attention to the first theatrical CGI or animated version of the Turtles. That's right, this is TMNT from 2007. So, Dan, before we get into the actual movie itself, I know we briefly touched on it last episode, but remind folks what your experience was with this movie before watching it most recently, and kind of set the stage for us a little bit.
I'll be brief because I had no previous history. This was the first time that I watched this. I thought maybe I watched it. You know, sometimes there's movies that you watch and you forget you did. But once it started, I'm like, no, I don't remember this at all. Everything was brand new to me. So, yeah, it was a brand new experience, and it was interesting because it was not at all what I expected going into it.
Yeah, I think I may have seen this one time before, and that was definitely it, because there was a lot of stuff that I didn't remember. But there was enough familiarity where I knew I had sort of seen it once, but I don't know if I was paying close enough attention the first time I watched it or not, because there was some stuff that I was like, I don't remember this at all. Did you watch this alone, or did you have anybody watch it with you?
I watched it mostly by myself. To be honest, watched it a lot on my phone, because I had the kids, by myself this weekend. So I was like, I'll put it on, let them watch their stuff on the TV, and I'll watch it. But honestly, like, in a way that makes me more focused on something, because I don't have my phone distracting me since I'm watching it on my phone.
There you go.
Yeah. So
that's the trick.
Yeah, but it's not no one makes a movie thinking somebody's gonna watch this on their phone one day. But you know, that's what I did.
That wasn't the vision.
No, Christopher Nolan would be like rolling over, not in his grave, he doesn't have a grave, but like manifesto of movie making.
Right. So this one is a 2007 release. It was directed and written by Kevin Monroe, and it is starring a whole bunch of people that we'll get to as far as the voices go. We'll probably break that down a little bit. I was thrown off immediately, Dan, because it was just like plastering the Weinstein Company up on like the logos and everything, and I'm like, oh, you might want to redo that. Yeah. So that, but it's a Warner Brothers / Weinstein Company / Imagi Animation Studios. I don't know if I'm saying that last one 100% correct. It was a very short-lived studio out of Hong Kong that did literally two movies and then went bankrupt. So
here you go.
They did this one, the TMNT 2007, and then they did the Astro Boy in 2009.
Oh, I like that movie.
But the problem is the Turtles one actually, I think, at least made their money back, but the Astro Boy did not do well. Like, I think they lost over 20 or 30 million on that.
Yeah, I could see that. It's not, but that's a legit good movie. I enjoy that movie.
So after that, they went out of business. They were kind of tossing around doing a sequel to this one. There was some unplanned or unrealized talk of a Legend of Zelda movie, a Gatchaman movie, some other things, but unfortunately they went out of business. So we never got any of that. So, and it was released in March and made about almost just shy of 100 million on a 34 million budget. So it did pretty good. I know it said it opened it up at number one at the box office, I believe, the week it came out.
It'd be 300.
Yeah.
Well, 300 was like in its third week, but
right.
Interesting. But one comic book movie beats another comic book movie.
Yeah, and interesting because of the animated aspect, I think, and being Turtles, because this is something that had not been tried yet at this point. Like, obviously, a lot of animated movies, especially Disney, Pixar, etc., do very well in theaters, but we hadn't seen something quite like this, so it's always a question on how that's going to do, and how that's, because a lot of movies that were made off of, especially cartoon series from the 80s and 90s, don't do well. Yeah. So it was, obviously we had the three live action films to kind of set a little bit of the stage, I guess. And they all had various levels of success. But this is kind of the first time we've seen this. So it was good that it made some money. And it's kind of debated, I guess, between Kevin Monroe, who, like I said, is the writer-director, and then Peter Laird on if this is connected to the live action films or not. Laird says that it's a completely different universe and different continuity. But Monroe seems to want to try to connect it a little bit here and there. And there's some sequences and some things that you can see in it that seem like they're at least homages. Yeah. But I don't think that's really consequential either way, whether it's connected or not. For the Turtles, it seems like they can just do their own thing standalone, or it can be a new version. And I think that's more than some franchises, but Transformers does it a lot. Turtles does it. And obviously there's varying success levels to that. But I think when you have all this different stuff to pull from, whether it be the animated series, the comic books, you know, takes on the live action movies, you kind of can do a whole bunch of different things. What's your thought on how much it should be either connected to any of those other properties?
I wasn't sure, watching it, it definitely feels like a movie that's connected to something, because it, you know, obviously takes place, the Turtles are disbanded. There's talk of the foot. Like, it felt like a TV movie, like a movie to a TV show cartoon that didn't exist in a way. Like, there's the Turtles in Time or something like that. It felt something akin to that, because the world felt like really lived in already. You had the foot and the leader of the foot, who was a character I didn't place or know, but it felt like we're supposed to know who she was.
Right.
Yeah. It didn't feel like it was connected to the live action films to me. Like, the way the characters were, especially like Casey Jones, obviously characters mature in April. I don't know. I wondered that at the time. Like, obviously you mentioned some references, like they had, you know, the 2 minutes for high sticking and like some jokes like that. But it definitely felt like, in partially because it's animated and it's, you know, it does not to me feel like part of the same universe as the live action films, especially the first and third one.
Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't really feel too much of a connection. And the stuff that you see, I think there's some stuff you see within the animation towards the end. There's something, I don't know if it was in their lair or where, that's like visual cues to something that would be in the live action film. I can't remember exactly what it was, but there's like something that appears. Yeah. But you could say that that's just an homage. It doesn't necessarily mean that the universes are connected, so to speak. I don't know. I guess it's up for somebody that's way more intelligent when it comes to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle franchise than I am debate.
It's not impossible. It's not like there's anything that is contradictory to the previous films. I just don't feel of the same world, in the sense of like how they're so impartially, just because the it's animated and the action's very different. But right. Yeah.
So. And also, like in the write-up, it's saying that the reason that the Turtles have grown apart is because of a defeat from Shredder. And that, to me, wouldn't connect with the live-action films.
No. Because
they defeated Shredder.
I mean, yeah. Twice. I mean, it's technically, by default, the second time, he kind of defeated himself, but I get it.
Yeah, for sure. So I just have to read the plot for this one, and then we can get more into some of the characters.
How much time do we got? Because it might take
something. I just want to read a couple lines. Just, I feel like if I say it out loud, maybe something will click with me, but... So the plot says, in ancient times, warlord, I'm going to say his name wrong, Yodel, is that how they say it in the movie? Yodel?
Not Yodel, but yeah.
Yodel opens a portal into a parallel universe that grants him immortality and petrifies his four generals, but the portal also releases 13 immortal monsters that are going to destroy his army and his enemies while becoming famous mythical monsters as centuries pass. And then if you skip ahead a little bit, basically, like, I love the explanation for this. So we have Cry, we have Shredder, Foot Clan, etc. Kind of, we don't see Shredder, but his quote-unquote second in command is Cry, and the Foot Clan are part of this. So they're searching the city for these 13 monsters before the portal opens again. Winters, who we find out is actually Yaddle, whatever, spoiler alert, reanimates his four stone generals. How? Well, he used technology created by his company. Yeah. And so we basically have this guy who's playing a dual role, Winters, and it's very obvious that he's also the guy. Like, if you don't realize that, like, from immediately, I don't think you can spoil that. So you have that person, and then you have these four generals who were once obviously on his side. Now they're kind of not so sure, because he's trying to get these 13 monsters before this portal opens, which is going to make everybody mortal again, so they can all die at some point, and they can be human, I guess. And the Turtles are worked in here somewhere. So,
yeah. you know, this was when Lord of the Rings was really big, you know, around that time, mm-hmm. I think. And it feels very influenced by something like that. It does not feel like a Turtles plot. Like, when it opens up, that's when I'm like, I definitely have not seen this before because this was in not what all at all what I expected. And I would say that is probably the weakest element of the movie is the plot, which is sometimes, you know, yes. not a good sign. But it's a bit laborious, like, with just how many pieces there are. It falls in line with a lot of tropes, like with the stars aligning. And there was that running gag for a long time. To be fair, this was early in that run where you had all those movies that had the shining light in the sky. You know, this, mm-hmm. Avengers, and obviously this came beforehand. But there was a lot of things it was hitting along those lines. But yeah, that piece was like a little much for me. It was hard to kind of keep track of it. I wasn't sure why all the monsters were in New York. I don't know if I missed something, but like, I opening it up and watching it, it's like this. It's a little overwhelming to start with when you have this big prologue about all these monsters and immortality. It feels like a lot of different pieces from different scripts kind of brought into one. And then like, all right, let's add the turtles on top of that.
Right.
Which was a bit weird. But it, you know, it was probably my least favorite part of the movie was like when it kind of dealt with that stuff. But right. It didn't tear it down completely for me.
It's, I think the word that comes to mind for me, like, if I want to sum up the plot, is just convoluted. Like, it's very convoluted. Like, because you can honestly just take this Max Winters slash Yodel. I'm going to call him Yodel because I like it. You could literally take that character and he's battling these generals because they both want different things. And then I guess you could even have the 13 monsters involved because that's how he's going to set everybody back to being human and mortal. Like, that is a story in and of itself, I guess. Whether you like it or not, I mean, I still probably wouldn't be a big fan of that actual plot, but that could be in and of itself. But then we have the turtles, and then we have Karai and the foot, and then we have Casey Jones, and I don't know, it just becomes very weird to me. And I agree with you, the plot is my least favorite part about this movie. If you just did the stuff with the turtles and you focused on that, I might have been fine because there's a lot of other stuff that I'm fine with. But it just, you keep getting thrown into these like random weird monsters and things of that nature. Like, one of them's called Vampire Succubor. I think the main thing with me that kind of throws me off, and I've kind of mentioned this a little bit with any franchise like this, is like, you have, again, all of these characters to draw from. And it's not just that you're not drawing from one of the characters I know from the TV series or the comics or something. Although Karai is from that, but she's not really that important to this plot. But it's not just that you're not drawing one of those characters. It's when you have these like almost nameless, faceless characters. And that's kind of like the monsters, and even to a point, the generals are very nondescript, generic, bland, just characters. I mean, I get, you get like the Winters as the kind of the main guy, even though he's somewhat good in the end, but I don't know, I just don't like where you just have these random antagonists that don't really have a personality, don't have a name, don't have an identity. And that was kind of my biggest drawback within that also convoluted plot.
They're more of like a natural disaster. They're trying to stop the natural characters. The spoiler of the end, when Winters changes his mind, or I guess he doesn't change his mind, but you find out that, oh no, he's actually trying to get rid of the monsters. I think the reason like that doesn't work that well is because like they almost made those monsters seem one either comedic or sympathetic. Like they didn't seem like this threat that had to be gotten rid of. Like, obviously they're crazy looking monsters, but it seemed like they weren't really bothering anybody. So,
where have they been? Where have they been for all of these decades? And well, I mean, it's been it's been a long time. Like, we're talking hundreds of years, I'm assuming. I don't remember.
Yeah, it seemed like this was a plot that was better designed for a miniseries or like its first season of a TV show than a movie because of all the moving pieces and stuff like that was there.
Right. But like, you either have to explain where these 13 monsters have been for the last, whatever it is, hundreds of years, or why they haven't been wreaking havoc everywhere. I can't just buy that they're just out and about and we just, I don't know.
They haven't been, and all in New York and all in like, you know, easy to find.
Very, very easy to catch.
Yes. like, it's one, you know, like something about how there where the myths come from, you know, that we have. And I guess that's what they're trying to lean at with some of the names and stuff like that.
One of them is called Bigfoot.
Yeah. So those things weren't really my favorite thing, but I thought when we actually got the elements with the turtles, first and foremost, I think the biggest thing with this, and I was worried about it because this is an animated film, like you said, from an animated company doing like its first really big movie from 2007. It's like, how bad is this going to look? Cause like, you know, not seeing coming in with fresh eyes, CGI animation doesn't always hold up unless it's like Pixar. But I thought like it legitimately, you know, I don't know if it's because I had low expectations. I thought it looked really good. I thought the action was pretty solid. Especially like there's some really good sequences. The one with Raphael and Leonardo in the rain. I thought that looked great. There's really some great looking shots on a technical standpoint, some long takes as well. And they didn't you know, use any shortcuts when it came to the animation. The action I thought was crisp and fun, and especially, I don't know, because like the last movie we saw was TMNT 3, which, you know, the action was not the strong suit, that I was just like taken back by how great it was in this. But yeah, like when we had the turtles there, I was excited, I was happy. It was, I thought like their dynamic, even though it felt like it was treading the same ground of Raphael being the rebellious one, his jealousy with Leonardo, at least it made sense. And maybe because everything else was so convoluted, having something that was simple and straightforward was welcoming. But I thought as a TMNT movie, it succeeded for me. But as like those pieces is where, when it tried to be something else, it's where it kind of got a little bit lost.
Yeah, it actually got nominated for an Annie for Outstanding Storyboarding in a Feature Production. And I agree. I think the look was fine. Like, I was not thrown off by the look. I didn't have any negative reaction to it. I thought the turtles looked good. I thought, like you said, the action looked good. And it's just one of those, it's like a conundrum of a film for me, because there's aspects of it that I enjoyed. There's aspects of it that I respect or like. And then there's just like this terrible plot that it's all wrapped up in. And it's just hard to forget. But let's get into a little bit of the characters, voicing, etc., whether it's talking about the actual performances or whether it's talking about the characters within the movies. We can get a little bit more into that, because we've talked a little bit during the live action topics about how the turtles are portrayed, you know, the characteristics, do they fit kind of the classic, what we're used to, and things of that nature. So just going down the voice cast a little bit, we have, it's interesting because we have some very, very experienced voice actors involved here. We have some lesser experienced voice actors, and then we have like the celebrities. So it's an interesting mixture of kind of all of that. It doesn't get much more iconic in the voice acting world, especially in the last probably 25 to 30 years, than Nolan North and James Arnold Taylor. And that's who is playing Raphael and Leonardo. So they are just legends in the voice acting business. So obviously they have a lot of experience. And then some of the generals and some of the side characters, like the leader of the South American bandits is John DiMaggio. Kevin Michael Richardson is one of the generals. Fred Tatasciore is one of the other generals. So you have like a substantial amount of just really good voice actors. Then you have some lesser known voice actors in Mikey Kelly and Mitchell Whitfield as Michelangelo and Donatello. And some of them have done a little bit of live action work as well. So a little bit less experience with Michelangelo and Donatello. I thought Mikey Kelly as Michelangelo sounded as close to the same actor as they had for some of the live action films as you could get, like, or at least got that same kind of feel for me. And then from the celebrity standpoint, we have Chris Evans as Casey Jones, Sarah Michelle Gellar, April O'Neil, and Patrick Stewart as one of the most bizarre castings that I can ever think of, as Max Winters, who is a businessman. I get that the warlord guy is like ancient,
yeah,
but this Max Winters guy is like a middle-aged man, and Patrick Stewart is not.
Yeah, I think Patrick Stewart just has one of those voices that it's just Patrick Stewart, so you kind of recognize it right away. Yeah, I had no idea it was Chris Evans when I was watching it, because I didn't look at the celeb list and cast list until I was over. And it's funny, like, that never gets caught up. People always talk about how he was, you know, of course, Captain America, as well as the Human Torch, but also Casey Jones. That's quite an array of comic book characters that he's played. But yeah, I didn't think Patrick Stewart was bad. It just was distracting. Like, one of
that was my problem. Like, his performance is fine. He does a great job. I just needed them to match the design of the character to what I'm going to think of when I hear Patrick Stewart. I mean, it doesn't have to look exactly like him, but I can't see somebody that is half of his age not half his age, but, you know, way younger. It just kind of was very distracting to me. And especially,
he looks like Mr. Incredible, but like in shape. So
Right. And then we had a kind of a cameo from Kevin Smith. He plays a cook in a diner. And then we had, this is Mako Iwamatsu, his last role. They basically announced that he was Splinter at, like, I don't know if it was San Diego Comic Con or one of the Comic Cons. And then he unfortunately, like, passed away the next day. So he is part of Splinter's role, and then they brought in Greg Baldwin, who's a voice actor, to kind of fill in all the gaps and to, you know, make it so they could complete it. So this is Mako's last role, obviously. And he's a very famous Japanese-American actor, obviously. So, and I can't forget that we had Lawrence Fishburne as the narrator. So that was interesting right from the beginning. I'm like, oh, they brought in the big guns for the narration here. Yeah. It's like Morgan Freeman and Lawrence Fishburne. They're like neck and neck for me. And I'm not going to try to pronounce the actress's name that did Karai. She did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She's like one of the most well-known Chinese actresses of that time. Like, I think they said something about like Forbes or somebody does like a top 100, like most notable or most powerful or something like that. And they do it for both. They did it for like for China specifically, and I think she was in the top five like 10 years in a row or something like that. So very well known there. I've only seen her in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I don't know if you've seen her in anything else, but any thoughts on any of the characters, whether it be the performance or just kind of how they were depicted in this film that worked or didn't work for you?
I thought it got the characters pretty well. Like this is our fourth film, it came to like feeling like I'm seeing each turtle well defined within their personality. I feel like this one was probably the best so far. Obviously it's mostly, you know, a Leonardo Raphael story. Like they are the focus for the majority of it, like that, you know. But even like the little bits that Donnie gets and Michelangelo gets, I thought, you know, they balance out well. Other voice cast overall was pretty strong. Casey Jones, I thought we could get a little bit more of, but again, there was a lot going on here. But at least he was in it. At least he actually got to do some stuff, you know, compared to,
right,
you know, beyond last film, he was just comic relief.
I like that they kept Casey Jones and Raphael both kind of as like these crime fighters on the side.
Yeah.
That worked for me.
I do like their relationship, and they kind of touch. That's where it did feel like the first film, because their kinship felt like it was coming from that first movie, and very similarly compared to what we got before. But yeah, I thought the characters that we got regarding, like, you know, besides the villains that we talked about, which were kind of lackluster, you know, the main cast, the main character, especially the turtles, even Splinter, I thought was.
Splinter's like this enigma, though. Like they can't seem to do Splinter the same way twice ever.
No. Like, I don't get why he was so against them going to the service world. I don't. It seemed like that was just contrived to like cause some conflict. But
I'm gonna be interested as we make our way through the rest of these. Like, if they ever, like, what depiction of Splinter is the most common when we're all done with this? Because I feel like he has moved around the most out of all of the characters. Donatello, obviously, in the beginning, we didn't really get a whole bunch with the first live action film of his geekiness and his kind of tech savviness. And it seems like since then, though, they've kind of course corrected and they've hit that every time. Like, he definitely is very much in that lane in this film. Michelangelo, very much the carefree, him doing the birthday entertainment stuff was, I thought was clever. I like that. And then, like you said, there's some, you know, not just Casey Jones and Raphael's relationship is akin to what we saw in the first live action film. But like you said, Leonardo's and Raphael's kind of very much similar, too, with their kind of back and forth. You know, we start this film like we kind of briefly touched on where all the turtles are kind of separated. So we see Leonardo, who's like in Central America doing training.
Yeah.
Amanda was like, how did he get to Central America?
Well, flew in the bottom. He flew with the dogs, apparently. You know?
Yeah. I was like, well, just watch. We'll figure it out. And then obviously Raphael is kind of cameoing as this Night Watcher character. Michelangelo's doing the birthday entertainment. And Donatello is like a IT tech support guy, which led to a weird like sex line joke. Like there was a sex hotline joke in here. And I'm like, this is Turtles.
Yeah. I mean, I technically like the early, like, you know, comics that were not, but yeah, I mean, there's been some, even in like some of the movies so far, they've always had, especially when it came to April, they've always had some really weird remarks towards her, right. But yeah. And Donnie's, this one, and Donnie's paying all the bills. Like that's, you know, that's how they're getting it. That's how they're getting cable and set or whatever they have. You know, he's the one doing all the hard work.
Right. And another interesting thing that might be, especially with some news that just kind of got posted online. I don't know if you saw this or not, but they just released the character descriptions for each of the turtles for the movie that's coming out this year.
No, I have not seen
that. So that is online. And the thing that's going to make everybody talk is what I'll get to in a second. But it's going to be interesting to see throughout all the other movies that we watch how consistent they are with April O'Neil and her love interest, because we commented briefly in the live action film that it was kind of weird that the turtles were kind of goo goo gaga for April.
Yes.
And then we obviously have a Casey Jones April connection right in that first live action film. And we see that kind of carry on so far with the other stuff we've watched, definitely in here. They're, you know, a couple.
Yeah.
Seems, yeah, you know, pretty. And so it went to describe the turtles that are going to appear in the 2023, and almost all of it matches up. Like, they added a little bit with Donatello, like he's into K-pop and something else. But it was still in that world, and they did all. Michelangelo lined up, Raphael lined up, Leonardo lined up, like exactly what you would think when you're just kind of trying to describe them off the top of your head. Mm-hmm. And then they add this like little blurb at the bottom. That basically says that Leonardo has a crush on April O'Neil and is dead set on going to the surface world and following his feelings for April.
Well, there you go.
So I think that's going to be something that people are talking about here in the next week that you're going to see online a little bit. So, but I'm interested to see how many different people they try to like connect April with, because I want to say at one point Donatello has a thing for her. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it all, but I'll watch it and see where it goes from there. So I also thought another thing was that the music that they put in here made me think a little bit of the first and second live action film. Yeah. Like, I feel like they at least tried to hit that vibe.
Definitely. It like, especially when you have the big like throwdown at the end within the big compound, that it definitely seemed like they were going for that type of tone in that or that style. It felt much more, there wasn't a lot of like music in the sense of but there were some key moments, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. where the soundtrack really kicked in big.
Right. They also added a couple lines that were reminiscent of the live action films. They had like the, I love being a turtle thing. Obviously that's been something. I think we've heard that in all the films so far.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. I'd have to go back and actually find out, but I know we've heard it a couple times so far in the films. What were your opinions of the turtle lair in this one, or the turtle van, any of that stuff?
They were okay. Like the lair seemed pretty nondescriptive. It felt, you know, just kind of basic. It, especially, you know, compared to the old subway when we got in the past, it didn't feel like it was in the sewer, but I guess it makes more sense since they've been there longer. You know, they've been able to clean it up a bit, and it doesn't seem like the foot or as much of a threat. So maybe they're not, you know. I like the design that Raphael had for his, like, you know, superhero getup or whatever you want to call it, with the motorcycle and whatnot.
Night Watcher.
Yeah, that thought like, you know, it was a little goofy, but it kind of made sense considering it's Raphael trying to hide the fact that he's a turtle in some sort of getup. So
right. The other thing I was thinking on this one is, I know we talked about like the plot's convoluted. Obviously, that's like apparent right from the get go. By the way, guys, when you start a movie and there's like 5 minutes of narration, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Like when they have to explain that much stuff to you off the bat before you ever see anything, you're like, I know it's Lawrence Fishburne, so I'm listening to it all day. But like, this is a bad sign. But can you just take Karai and the foot out of this and nothing changes?
Well, they're the ones that capture like the last beast or
I guess,
but
I don't know. I just feel like that is completely shoehorned into this movie.
It felt like that. Like I said, I felt there was more there because you see that I don't like, how does she become the leader of the foot to begin with? Like, where does she come from? It's supposed to be a red herring. You're thinking like, oh, it's the foot supposed to be the bad people here, but they end up.
I want to know what happened to Tatsu or whatever that dude's name true.
Is. Plus, I think they were also there to set breadcrumbs for what they hope would be sequels. So But yeah, they didn't have much to do here except be cannon fodder and, you know, help out a little bit at the end.
Yeah, I guess the talks originally there was when they were talking about the sequel, like they were throwing around the idea of it being Turtles, like somehow in space.
Nice. Why not? Why not? I guess Fast and the Furious got that idea. And like, you know what? We'll steal that for our 11th, 9th movie. Was it 9th?
Yeah, something like that. And there was another one that I guess it was like a planned trilogy by Monroe. Like he wanted to do a 3-parter. And I know one of them or somewhere in there, he wanted to have like the Technodrome be a part of it and the Triceratons and things like that. So
I would have been fine with that. Too, where they thought about like where there was like Michelangelo would be, you know, upset with the turtles and join the foot, which maybe would make sense with what happened here since they kind of showed that they were honorable. So maybe they weren't like the foot of the bat, you know, completely evil.
It seems like I think that's existed somewhere. I don't know if it was in one of the comics or not, but I always wonder, like, is that the turtle that would join? Like, isn't it way more likely that Raphael would be that character?
I think Raphael would be too stubborn. I think Michelangelo can kind of make sense because he's a little bit easier to manipulate, maybe. Like younger, more naive.
Yeah,
potentially.
Oh, they also in the little blurb, I know this kind of sidetrack, but in the little blurb for the 2023 movie, they also make a point to mention how old the turtles are. Not like an actual age, but like in relation to each other. So in the new one, Leonardo's the oldest, then Raphael, then Donatello, and then Michelangelo. He's the youngest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I always think like Raph being oldest makes the most sense, but that's...
I agree. Because that would add to like the tenseness as far as like, why is Leonardo leading me when I'm the older brother? I could buy that.
I definitely feels the oldest in this. Like his like the design is a little taller and bigger compared to the others.
They're expanding. They're getting ready for something more to come. There was a dumb, I just have to throw this out there. There was a dumb dad, like almost dad joke in here that I was dying. And I don't know why. I don't know if it just hit me in the right spot, but there's like they're talking about winters at one point, and one of the turtles is like more like fall. And I was dying. I don't know why, but I was like, I mean, it was looking at me weird. Anyways, I appreciated jokes like that, I guess nowadays.
Dad, I don't even remember that, to be honest with you, but I mean, I may have gone over my head.
So obviously this one came out and did okay right away at the box office, as far as at least it didn't lose money for this company. And it, like you said, it beat 300 and so some other stuff. Critical response, not great. That's going to be a theme, I think, probably for all the films we talk about, except for maybe one. And it had like a 34% on Rotten Tomatoes. How do you feel about it, especially in comparison to the four films that we've looked at so far? Like, I'm not necessarily saying you have to rank them all, but kind of what's your like first instinct as far as like, where does this one fall? The plot's terrible, but there's a bunch of other good parts. Is that enough to like make up for it and get it decent rank for you?
Yeah, like I was, you know, I went into this trying to be as blind as possible, like not knowing anything. And when I was like, what is the rating for this? And I saw a 30%, which I was like, that feels really low to me. Like, I'm not, like, again, I talked about how I think the plot's really convoluted and complicated, which is true. Honestly, out of all the ones we've watched so far, it's probably ranking right now, like, right below the first one. Not that there's a huge amount of competition there, but I generally enjoyed myself. Like, I don't know, because maybe I had low expectations. I didn't know what to expect, but like I said, I enjoyed the turtle dynamic. I thought the action was fun. It didn't overstay its welcome. I don't know if it's because it's 90 minutes and like we can never get a 90 minute movie anymore and just something that can kind of just do what it needs to do and get out. But yeah, it certainly has its faults. I went through it. I was curious like why people were so negative about it. And I agree regarding the plot stuff, but I also saw a lot of people saying it was not goofy enough or not fun enough or whatever, which I don't agree with. I felt like I feel like that people just comparing it to like the cartoon show and because it's not like that. Right. But I thought it had a good balance. I felt like it had, you know, the jokes when it needed to, but it had some serious moments. Some of the good moments that carried out for me were like that, like the action I thought was solid. There was a great, like, long, not great, but a pretty solid long take near the end when they're entering the compound and like they're going through all the different turtles. It felt like people that really wanted to make a good movie, you know, like they put their heart and soul into it, and maybe they needed a bit of a better editor when it came to the plotting, but I legit thought it was good. Like, basically saying the action was solid. It was a funny film when it needed to be. The characters were good when it came to like the turtles and their surrounding cast. So despite my apprehension, despite like the issues I've had, you know, with with everything surrounding that, it didn't bother me enough despite all of its faults.
Yeah, that, like I said, the plot's terrible. The casting of Patrick Stewart is distracting, even if he's a good performer. So like those are like my two biggest negatives. It's an interesting thing though, because it's like you see all these things where they're going back to, for me, to the first live action film, where it be the relationships between the characters and some of that with Casey Jones and Raphael, with Raphael and Leonardo, and kind of the inner relationships between the turtles reminds me of a lot of the first Turtles. Then it has a little bit more of that serious, I'm not saying dark necessarily, but it has a little bit of like, let's go a little bit towards the comics versus the cartoon, which reminds me a little bit more of the third live action film, because it seemed like that's both of those films were trying to do that in a way. And then, you know, you have the music nods. So it's like, it seems like it's a little bit of this film, a little bit of that film. And it makes me wonder if the third film had been animated by this exact same company with the exact same look, you know, how would they have stacked up against each other at that point?
Yeah.
Because something that's distracting for me in the third one is so much of the visuals are just super distracting for me and off-putting in the third. So I'm like, if the third movie had been animated in CGI like this, would it have been better? I don't know. Like I definitely go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. Like if you just put that story pen to paper and maybe made it a comic, it would probably be a lot better than it was when you're distracted by the fact that you're looking at what are clearly bad puppets that don't, their mouths just do not work the way that they should.
Right. So, yeah, so this one's definitely for me below the first live action. I don't know where it falls after that. I think I'd have it right close to the second movie with me. And it just kind of depends on what you value more, whether you value the story more or whether you value the character relationships and the look and the sound and everything like that. And I still think I have the third live action film as my least favorite so far. I would probably watch this animated one again before I would watch the third live action film. But that's just my personal preference. Yeah. Anything else that you haven't had a chance to talk about, Dan, as far as this film goes or where we're sitting right now with the four films in out of, I believe it's going to be 10 in total, 9, 10, no, something like that.
No, I'm definitely glad I watched it because I was, I don't know what took me so long. I think I was interested when it was coming out. And then I think I heard, and I just never saw it. It was one of those things where it's just like, yeah, never went around to it. But I was glad I watched it in the end. I can't say that about every movie we've watched. You know, this is turning out a lot better than, you know, the video game retrospective. So,
yeah, I don't think I can get that back.
No.
So next on the docket would be just what came out 2 years later, which was an animated made-for-TV film called Turtles Forever. We've referenced that a couple times. That, I believe, is one or two or three that didn't actually make it to theaters. So the Turtles Forever from 2009 is where we'll get to next, and then we'll jump back into some live-action look with what we saw in the 2014-2016 era. So I don't know if I'm looking forward to those two as much, but I remember enjoying Turtles Forever. I know I've seen it at least once for sure.
Yeah.
And I remember enjoying it. Have you've seen Turtles Forever?
I watched it once. I watched it back when we were doing like the animated movie countdown. Okay. So
this will be a second watch for both of us, but probably at least 5+ years since we've seen it.
Definitely. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where we go from there. Dan, anything that you have going on with your TikTok or comic coverage that you'd like to share with everybody?
No, I can just, you know, just the same as always, find my stuff on TikTok at Comic Concierge. It's also Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, all that good stuff. With it being like halfway through the year almost, I'm going to try to do some like favorite of stuff for June. So we'll see how that goes.
You did do something Turtles related though recently, I saw, right?
Did I do something Turtles related?
I thought you did something that was like a look at something Turtles comic.
Oh, I did. Yes. Yeah. So recently I did a review of the, they right now just started a new comic, Saturday Morning Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I forget the exact series, but it's basically a comic that takes place in the universe of the original cartoon series from the 80s. It's, you know, very much inspired by that. So I did a review of the first issue. And you'll be happy because, you know, Rat King's in it. And then we've been talking about Rat King a lot. So it's a fun book. I did a review of the first issue. This is the second series they're doing of this. They did a series earlier. They also did one for G.I. Joe as well. You know, it's just for IDW. But they really, you know, find different ways to use their properties. But if you love that cartoon, definitely check that out. There's a lot of comics coming out right now too, because there's the Ronin comic that's out soon, and I was actually working on a review of, they had a crossover this week with Street Fighter, so that was interesting to see. Very 90s. It was like, you know, 90s are coming back in a major way, so you can check for that soon as well.
I like it. And you can keep up with whatever I'm doing if you follow the Geek Showcase on YouTube. I've just finished the Ultimate Saturday Morning Cartoon Lineup series that I did, which was going every year 1983 through 1989 and highlighting 8 cartoons that aired in that year. And there's some other stuff that kind of goes along with that.
And do the 90s next or not?
I'm going to take a break from that series for a minute. I've been wanting to do this, like, we've been making our way through every Star Trek series in chronological order, and we're down to Picard, which is one of the more recent ones. So we've already watched all of Enterprise, all of Voyager, all of Deep Space Nine, all of the Next Generation.
How many years have you been doing that for? Jeez.
We've been doing it for a while now. But I'm going to go through and do some quick videos where I'm ranking the crew from each of those series, like my favorite to least favorite characters or something of that nature. I haven't 100% decided, so I'm going to be doing some Star Trek related content, and then I'll probably jump back into some cartoons because that seems to be what people like right now. So it's getting some views that I didn't expect, so I enjoy that. And you can keep touch with us too on Twitter or Facebook. You can either search out Geekcast Radio Network, which is going to give you all the different podcasts that are done by the network and by the other guys, or like you said, you can look at Dan's stuff on Twitter or my stuff. It would be at Optimus Solo or at Geek Showcase. And that does it for this episode. We'll come back next time and look at Turtles Forever from 2009. So that is it from Cinema Geeks. Tune in next time for more Turtles Holiday.